Daniel in the Kitchen talks about food. Daniel in the Kitchen talks recipes. Daniel in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Daniel in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we're here at the studios of KHOI in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. We are glad to be here. And I want to take a little opportunity now to remind you that community radio really is what it says. It's community radio. We exist because
of with
you.
With unity, right?
Unity.
With
community.
Community.
Right. So your support helps to keep this station on the air and keep this program on the air.
Yeah, and to remind you all that we are all volunteers. So it's not like we want the sponsorship for anything but total altruistic means.
Well, that too. We have fun.
We have fun. Okay.
We have
a lot of fun, and it keeps our brains working quite well.
Yes, it does. Daniel in the Kitchen is just part of a whole bunch of good programming here, local programming, but also we get national shows in too. But tune in because you might hear somebody on the radio that you know, and there are such a variety of different topics going on all the time.
Yeah, I really feel like the programming at KHOI reflects a broad spectrum of our community, you know? All kinds of crazy people living in Ames, and they make radio shows.
It's nice.
Very creative.
It's nice to listen to people. And if you don't like something you hear on the radio, or you think something is missing, come on in and make your own show. These nice folks will help you because they sure have helped us. So thanks to KHOI for being here. And
you know what? I want to mention we are going into our 10th year of the Daniel in the Kitchen soon.
Who would have thought?
We didn't do this on purpose. No. It just happened.
Yeah. It's nice to just kind of meet once a week and Talk about food, farming,
advice, recipes, and opinions.
We do that. So you can support this radio station by going to khoifm.org/membership on your computer and give us your support along with your ears. So thank you. Well, it's time to think ahead, Donna. Well, it's way past time to think ahead because here we are sliding into the holidays.
Oh, yeah. This is, in my brain, I think of it as the eating season.
It is. We can do that. So are you hosting Thanksgiving or are you one of those nice guests that plans to take a dish to a gathering at somebody else's house? There's covered dishes in the air, and there are things moving around. There's all sorts of recipes we want to try. Donna, what do you want to say about side dishes? Last week, we talked about turkey.
We talked turkey last week, but, you know, I have to say, whatever we say on this radio show is simply adding to the total cacophony of every major newspapers having these big Thanksgiving spreads. How to cook the turkey, how to thaw the turkey, how much turkey to cook, how to carve it, how to this, how to that. And then the plethora of side dishes and options. It's funny that, but I like this holiday because A, it's non-denominational. This is about being thankful, which we can all, it's good for all of us, right?
Right.
And there's this set concept of a menu. So everybody, you know, it's turkey and dressing, potatoes and gravy, a green vegetable, the cranberries, probably some sweet potatoes, and then, of course, pumpkin pie, apple pie, pecan pie. And you take all of those elements, and the variations are unbelievable. It makes a lot of newspaper copy this time of year, I have to say.
It does. And even people that are a little shy of trying things in the kitchen, they all kind of put on their apron and, well, I should make something. I should.
It's good for us. Yeah, everybody should cook a little bit. You know, it's a good way of taking care of yourself and your friends. So this is the cooking week or so marathon. My two cents for everybody who's getting a little anxious about this is keep it simple. I mean, yeah, if you want to, you know, look up something fancy in the New York Times and try to replicate it and whatever. The thing that I try to do, and this is true in all of the cooking, is, you know, mashed potatoes are mashed potatoes, right? You can make the lumpy ones, of which I call smash potatoes, or, you know, but the thing is, if whatever dish you're making, whether it's Brussels sprouts or green beans or kale, even for goodness sake, if we're going to be a little bit healthy here, is to push your flavoring deeper. You know, there are very few seasonings that you can't just, one of them would be rosemary, okay? There is such a thing as too much rosemary. So go easy on the rosemary, but it is a good time of year thinking of, you know, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, you know, all of those. But aside from the rosemary, you can up all of them. I've been, two of my tricks. Well, there are two ingredients this year that I, and other years too, but I'm really on a browned butter kick. And there was an article, I think it was in the New York Times, but I read that and went, of course. We've talked about making brown butter sage. Let's go over this in one sort. Brown butter is when you take the butter, you put it in and we're talking at least a stick, okay? It takes a little bit of quantity to make it worth your while. But you cook the butter, not over super high heat because you can burn it, but you cook it briskly while you're watching it and stirring. First it melts and then it bubbles a little. And then what happens is, so butter is butter fat and all butter has some milk solids in it. So as the butter cooks, the milk solids kind of separate from the oils and they go into the bottom of the pan and they brown. So you're taking your butter and you're actually getting this kind of nutty flavor from it. So the New York Times was saying, oh yeah, put some brown butter in your mashed potatoes. I went, oh yeah, of course. Why not? I would say you could even try it with sweet potatoes. That sounds wonderful to me. And actually, Lana, remember you had that brown butter Rice Krispie recipe?
Oh yes.
I mean, this is the thing about brown butter. It doesn't scream at you, but it just makes everything taste a little bit better.
It's kind of like butter for adults.
I think children even like, especially if it's Rice Krispies, for goodness sake.
Well.
I had a brown butter brownie recipe that I made this summer.
Idea.
I know, it just makes everything better. So think about brown butter, you know, even if you just pour it over your green beans. It elevates it a little bit. And I have to say a little trick. You know, if you are going to a fine dining restaurant and that you think, oh my goodness, this tastes so wonderful, there's a trick in the kitchen. Liberal use of good oils, which would be better olive oils, never the cheap vegetable oil kinds of things, and butter. So those are the things that make the quality of the food slightly elevated. And also I think probably, unless we're really counting calories, which no one does on Thanksgiving. But at home I tend to cook with butter, unrefined, you know, cold pressed olive oil, mostly a little canola, but not that much. Mostly I use those two fats and of course lard. But anyway, brown butter is a nice element. Or the other thing we talked about earlier is buying some fresh sage or picking it in the garden because it's still out there. It's kind of frost resistant and we haven't had terribly cold weather. So you take the fresh sage, a good amount of it, and take the stems off, just the little leaves. And as you're browning the butter, you put the fresh sage in and you cook it till it's almost black, very crispy, very dark. And then you end up with brown butter sage, which is also wonderful in sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, dressing. That's a good place to put the brown butter sage, too. You can also fry up your rosemary a little bit. Of course, you don't use as much rosemary, but that's always good fried in butter. Thyme, which is still out in the garden. Now, I did do this thing this year where I put the thyme with some gross salt, the larger crystals, in a jar. So this will keep, I can use this. I keep it in the fridge, but I can have that fresh thyme flavor for several months still. But this is the season to sort of bust out the sage and the thyme. And then, of course, don't forget to use extra garlic. Lots and lots of garlic. This is, pardon me for repeating myself, but if you've been listening for 10 years, you know I harp on this. It's called my garlic trick, where Lana grows the garlic, right? So we have an abundance of them. So I take a lot of whole cloves and I put them in the Cuisinart with some olive oil, and I just churn it up into a puree of olive oil and garlic. And I keep that on as I'm cooking so I can, you know, it's like if you have to stop and chop every single garlic clove, you tend to use a little bit less. But if you have lots of it, you can throw it into the mashed potatoes, the sweet potatoes, the green beans, the Brussels sprouts, certainly in the turkey dressing. In fact, last year, and I think I'm going to do it again this year, I did it instead of I don't brine. It's wet brine. It's really messy for a big old bird. I just started a day extra earlier, and I took a lot of salt and rubbed it all over the bird and in, you know, make that pocket where you go under the skin in the breast and up over the legs. And I stuffed in garlic, salt, and herbs. And I just let it sit for, you know, about 24 hours. And then I started the rest of the process with the turkey. But rub that bird down with garlic.
Good.
So those are my encouragements, is just make the classics and things that you love. Push your flavorings a little bit more deeply. You can have more. Oh, I forgot to mention marjoram.
Okay.
Sweet marjoram, which I buy dried, is another wonderful fall herb. I never make my turkey dressing without it.
That is a good herb, and I always try to grow it, and it doesn't like me that well.
It's hard to grow, and it's also not a little thing. It's worse than the thyme. Although the leaves are a little bit bigger, they're harder to, you can't strip them off as well. I do buy that already dried.
Very good. Well, I have a question since you started out talking about butter. And as usual, you kept on talking about butter. Salted or unsalted?
Oof. You know, everybody makes a big deal out. It's really simple. Use what you have in the refrigerator. If you're using salted butter, don't quite add as much to the recipe. One of the reasons people always say to cook with unsalted is because then you can control how much salt you're putting in. Salted butters, depending on the brand, they vary. Some are extremely salty and some are not very salty at all. But, you know, if you're consistent in the brand that you use and you know what it does, you can, in your pastry, when you're pie dough, what are you using? Salted butter or unsalted?
I usually start, like you mentioned, I usually start out with unsalted and then I salt things. The only time I really notice the difference, because I'm adding things as I go, when you have your butter there and you pull it out and you put it on your toast or bagel in the morning, then you notice if it's salted or unsalted, if you're just eating butter. So
yeah, and some people love the salted butter on their toast, and other people think it's yucky. It's just,
I like it.
It's just a habit. And, you know, salty is one of those things you can put too much in, and if it's too salty, you've kind of ruined the dish. You know, undersalting, you know, you can always add more. Taking it out, you can't really do. So that's why people make a fuss about using unsalted butter. But, you know, it's no big deal.
Taste things as you go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we're talking about things besides the turkey. We're talking about, you know, all the things that we make on the side. And I I expanded my horizons last night. I tried a brand new recipe, and this is a recipe from...
Oh, this is a wild one.
This was a recipe from cookbook author Amy Thielen, and her book is called Company. We'll probably...
Okay, let's say who she is. We've talked about her before. She is from northern Minnesota, and she does a really credible job about writing about Midwestern cooking. And this particular book, which is her newest book, she really writes about entertaining, and she starts out in the introduction where she says, and I think most of you in Ames will relate to this, although we have a few good local restaurants, this is not like New York City or even Minneapolis, where you can choose lots of exciting eating adventures. You actually have to create your own dinner parties and your own eating adventures at home, which I think is pretty marvelous. So she talks about that. She lives way up in the Northwoods and how they make their own entertainment amongst their friends by having lots of dinner parties. So the book is full of her recipes for dinner parties and things like that. And she does have some very clever ideas, and she is very, even though she trained in New York with some very fancy places, she has a Midwestern sensibility, which is just delightful. I mean, she right. brings the flair of the professional training right into the home kitchen. That's my favorite thing.
Yeah, it inspired me.
Yeah, so this new book, Lana is having a ball with it, and she did this. Oh, tell us.
Oh, who would have thought? And, of course, I was drawn in by the picture. The recipe is called spiralized roast potatoes. If any of you have a apple peeler, this is for you. The kind
that you clamp
on the table, and it goes round and round and round and round.
Turn it, yeah.
And so it makes spirals of the apple, and it cores the apple, and it theoretically, if you set it up right, it also peels the apple. It's one of these technological wonders.
Yeah, so, that Lana is very adept.
And I like using it, so I thought, well, look at that. I can do that. It's doing this with the potatoes, spiralizing them. So you end up with potatoes that don't have a core. You wouldn't have to push a core out, but that's how the apple peeler works. But what's nice is that it cuts everything in a spiral. And then if you catch it on the end, you end up with a perfect little spiralized ball. The first couple, I forgot to catch it, and so I ended up with ribbons, which were fine. They're just ribbon piles of, so I used
That's
those
not
too.
What the picture in the book
no, the
looks like, though.
Hers are just all neat and tidy. But, okay, you take the apple peeler, and this is a good time to think about this, because we're thinking ahead to the holidays, And
this is visually fancy.
Yeah,
visually
fancy.
This appeals to the designer in Lana.
It's not that you need to do this ahead of time, but if you don't have an apple peeler, you might want to go out and get one. Anyway, this starts out with 12 medium yellow potatoes, and I used Yukon Golds. You don't want the flaky kind.
No russets.
Okay.
Right. They would just turn into mush. And they're also the wrong shape for the spiralizer.
Right.
For the peeler, you want
roundish.
Go to the bin at the grocery store and pick out the most uniformly sized round Yukon Golds.
Because they're supposed to be peeled as they go during this apple peeler experience. I didn't have very good luck peeling, but so I just left the peels.
You don't need
to
peel
them. Fine, that's fine. But okay, 6 cups water, and get this, 3 tablespoons sugar, and you take your 12 yellow potatoes and spiralize them. You get them looking like cut up.
And somehow once they're cut, you put them back into their little round nest forms?
Yeah, it works pretty well if you catch them just as soon as they come out. You can do it with apples.
All right,
too.
We have to
it
take your word for this. This is
there.
A real experiment,
practice.
Yeah.
Then what you do, and this is interesting, you take the apples and put them into 6 cups water that has 3 tablespoons of sugar and squish them around. You with sugar? You think sugar?
Wait. Before they're cut?
No, after they're cut.
How do you keep them in the...
You don't let go of them. Just kind of squish them a little
bit. Okay.
It's very much like doing an apple, okay? And then that you put a little bit of sugar that helps caramelize them. And then you put these in a 9 by 13 inch baking dish. stand them on end, so you got this little spiral stick.
So this is a little bit like making like roasted apples or something.
Yeah. And then you put a little bit of that sugar water, just a little bit to cover the bottom, in the bottom of the pan, cover it with tin foil, and bake it at 350.
Now this is not enough sugar that they taste sweet. It's just to make it caramelized.
Right. And it also keeps the potato from turning slightly brownish
as you are
working on the rest of them, because it takes a while to kind of get this peeler going.
Yeah, this sounds like a labor of love here.
Technique here. And then you, a sea salt pepper, she calls for 3 sprigs of thyme and 1 sprig of rosemary, cover it with tin foil and bake.
All right, so it has a little of the sugar water in the bottom of the roasting pan, and then so you're essentially steaming them for a while.
You're steaming them for a while. And she says steam for 30 minutes, and I hate underdone potatoes, so I made it a little bit more because I tested it with a fork. Okay, when you're done with steaming them for 30 minutes at 350, take the tin foil off and melt 1 stick of butter.
Yay, there we go. There's my butter.
Plus more. You grease the baking dish too. And then you pour that all over this stuff, and there's holes already in these.
If you wanted to be fancy, you could even make it brown butter.
You could. You put them back in the oven and turn up the heat to 375 for a while. So it turns brown. It's lovely.
Crisps up then.
It crisps up nicely. It's beautiful. Mine had some of these ribbons kind of on the side. And I want to mention, and she doesn't talk about this in the recipe here. If you ever used apple peel, you know this. It cores them at the same time. So there's this core that comes out. So you end up not with all these little perfect little spiralized potatoes, little orbs. We also end up with these chunky insides of the potato, and she doesn't even mention them. Well, you don't want to waste those. I just stuck them in the side there. And she probably didn't want to talk about it because they look an awful lot like a tampon, I tell you. But that's okay.
Well, you could chop them up and throw them in some soup or something.
You could. Right. But I just put them in the side, and I thought, I was very proud of myself. Not quite as fancy as her picture, but spiralized roast potatoes. And these aren't mashed potatoes. This is something else. I think it's perfectly.
It's a little bit, there's this other potato recipe. It's very classic, where you take more like a russet and you, Hasselback, is that the word?
Oh, yes.
Where you cut them in slight, I never do it because it's too tedious, but some people who are patient and love the look of it.
Yeah.
And then you roast them with, I don't know what something. I think probably brushed with butter or.
I think you put like ham or something and bits in them.
You can put anything. Anyway, these decorative potato dishes. Yum, yum, yum.
And so this is from the book Company by Amy Thielen. And we will get back to her book. It's a fun one. I want to mention, too, that you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. And this is a good time to support this radio station. We are in the studio here with our engineer, who happens to also be the general manager of this fine place. Mike, do you have any fine words to say about this radio station?
Well, I don't know if they're going to be fine words, but they'll be words. I can guarantee you that. I've been working on words all day. So, there's a lot to say about this radio station. I just really think there's, especially on Tuesdays, it seems we have a lot of locally produced programs on Tuesdays. We, of course, there's local talk, and we heard All Things Piano with Tom Russell earlier today. And, of course, Donna Lana Kitchen, not only do we get to hear it at noon, but there's another opportunity.
Twice on Tuesdays.
That's right, at 7 p.m. And then same with Community Bookshelf. The program that follows this at 1 o'clock also follows Donna Lana Kitchen at 8 o'clock tonight. And, of course, we've got the Science Bites with Mike Metz and Sam Wormley. That airs this afternoon at 4:30. We've got...
And this is all original programming.
Right. That's right. We've got the Anna Ginger Show. We still consider her local, even though she's broadcasting out of Ohio these days. And then we've got Todd Hageman's Eclectic Mix and the Dream Doctor's Music Rare and Well Done, all locally produced programs here on a Tuesday, as well as all the other great national programs that we air. But that's just one reason to celebrate and support KHOI as we try to be more and more locally focused. So please go to khoifm.org/membership.
Great. Because you are listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks to you, our listeners, for making this radio show and this radio station happen. We're talking about sides today. What would the world be without sides?
Thanksgiving sides.
Thanksgiving sides. You know, like sidekicks. Like Donna and I are sidekicks. We're sides, too. Yes. We've been talking about potatoes. There's so many things to do with potatoes. Besides being a vehicle for gravy, which is wonderful. They can also have their sculptural elements. We've been talking about that, too. But there's some other things that we have on our Thanksgiving table. Cranberries, Donna. What are you doing for cranberries?
Oh, I bought some at the store yesterday because the fresh ones are in, and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do? Then I remembered for the last 2 years I did something that I loved and everybody else loved, and I kept doing them all the way through until Christmas, which is, well, they're raw cranberries. You can't use frozen. You have to have the fresh ones, but you make they're called sugared cranberries, and I was trying to, I can't remember where the recipe is, so I'm trying to do this from memory, but basically you're making a sugar syrup. Now, there are recipes, I Googled it, you know, sugared cranberries or something, but my recipe, the one I really liked, was a sugar syrup, so it's just sugar and water, but into that I also put cardamom. Ground cardamom, quite strongly predominant flavoring, and a little bit of pepper and a tiny pinch of salt. So I make this, you make the syrup and then you let it cool down to, you know, room temperature sort of thing. Cause if you put the you want the cranberries not to be cooked. Cause once they cook, they lose, you know, how cranberries do. They collapse basically. So you make your sugar syrup, you let it come to room temperature, and then you sit the cranberries in a whole glop of it. You have to make plenty of syrup, like a quart of syrup, and then you pour the cranberries. So they're all covered. And then I usually let them sit in the syrup for a while, like, you know, even overnight or something. Then you kind of take them out and let the syrup all drip back off. Now, I saved the syrup because I ended up making a few more rounds because everybody likes it. Anyway, you let them... You want some of it to stay, but you don't want them dripping wet. And then you take a baking sheet pan, right? And on that sheet pan, you've taken sugar, more cardamom, a little bit more pepper, and you've made a dry mix of that and spread it out on the sheet pan. And then you take your slightly wet cranberries and you plop them onto the sheet and you roll them around so they get covered in more sugar. And then you kind of just let them sit out at room temperature and dry off.
They do?
They do dry. Oh. You know, sometimes it depends on how wet they were, but they end up being, so you know cranberries have to be sweet, and they're very, very sour. So when you eat them, once the sugar has dried off, you pop a couple into your mouth, like you would M&Ms or something, right? And they, you're hit with this sweet cardamom flavor, and then the burst of the raw cranberry into your mouth, and they are really yummy.
They are, because they were a big hit last year. You use them, actually, you can kind of put them on a cheese plate or put them with your cookies, or because they're really, you just kind of end up sliding up to the buffet,
yeah,
and getting a handful, and boy, are they ever good.
And they're really pretty, and I keep making them all through the holidays because they're very good on lots of other desserty kind of things, or just to munch on as even a pre-dinner or after dinner or during dinner, or you know, and they are the sort of thing, if they're sitting there on the kitchen counter, you grab one or two as you go by, and they do keep for a little while. Usually eat them all before you have to worry about it. But I'm going to make up the cardamom syrup and start my first batch, and then through the next few weeks, we'll just keep making more of them.
That's one of the better inventions for the holidays. I'm a real fan of the sugared cranberries. Oh, but there's a lot of things you can do with cranberries. And the traditional way is you buy a can of Ocean Spray and you squish it out of the can.
Yeah, you open both ends and push it through.
And you push it.
Yeah.
And it's preformed. Do you make any molded cranberries?
Well, I think I'm going to do this year because I did it last year. I made my own cranberry jello, basically. I'm going to use cranberry juice, a little bit of fresh orange juice, and then put gelatin in it, and then use a classic mold so that when it comes time for the dinner table, you unmold it, and it's got a little, you don't need too much cranberry, right? So, I mean, depending on how many people you're making, but I did find at a garage sale a perfect, like, 6-inch decorative copper mold, and I'm using that for Thanksgiving.
We don't use that, the molded stuff anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when was the last time you unmolded Jell-O?
A long time, Donna, a long time.
I know, but it's kind of fun, and it's
fun.
A good trick for children. I'm not sure. Some people spray the inside of their mold with a little bit of cooking spray. I might try. Supposedly it comes out easier. But the idea with a mold is it's metal, but it's very thin. So if you take a bowl of very warm water that's slightly bigger than the mold itself, and you just put it in there, and you have to watch till you can see it start to jiggle a little, and then you put the plate and you flop the whole thing over.
It's a very rewarding thing
tricky.
To do.
It's very tricky.
And it's pretty, and I like it, and I think I'll make, I don't know if I'll make that a cranberry, but molded stuff is actually really kind of fun, and it's a nice addition to the table. I've got a couple molds too that just don't get used enough.
I know. People hang them on the walls because they're pretty, but they are fun to use.
Yes, they are. And there's nothing wrong with a good chunk of gelée. It doesn't have to be made with Jell-O.
Not Jell-O brand, but when we say Jell-O, it is technically a brand name, but you can buy unflavored gelatin, and that's what I use and make my own flavors.
That's good. One thing that is a go-to for my Thanksgiving, well, actually Christmas too, is horseradish cranberry relish.
Oh, yeah. This is a good one.
This is a classic. I've been doing this for years. And this originally came from National Public Radio reporter Susan Stanberg, who used to read it on the air as an annual Thanksgiving tradition. And So heaven knows how many decades I've been making this, but it does work.
It's really easy to do.
Get this. 2 cups fresh cranberries, 1 small onion, 1/2 cup sugar, 3/4 cup sour cream, 2 tablespoons or more to taste. I go for the more to taste of prepared horseradish. Grind the cranberries and onions. Fold in the other ingredients. Put the mixture.
What, in the, grind them in the Cuisinart?
Cuisinart.
Yeah.
I've been doing this before I had a Cuisinart. I don't know what I did.
What did you grind them with?
I had a meat grinder.
Oh my goodness!
I mean that works. Too.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. But the Cuisinart is perfect. And fold in the other ingredients. Put the mixture in a covered container and freeze. This is important. You have to freeze at least overnight. But this is the kind of thing to make a day or two ahead. Then 2 hours before you want to eat it, take it out of the freezer and let it thaw on the kitchen counter. It is pink. It is got little chunks in it. It should be cool but not mushy. You stir it lightly and put it into a pretty dish to serve. And it's surprisingly good with the holiday turkey, including the leftovers. And it goes also well with beef and pork.
Yeah, well, you know, you remember that we have the cranberries on the table for their tartness. It kind of cuts through all the other rich, butter-filled dishes.
Right, right. You can find that horseradish cranberry relish recipe on the Don and Lana Kitchen Show recipe page on the KHOI is just so darn handy. You can find a bunch of recipes. We have a web page there on the KHOI website, khoifm.org. Go to the talk section, go to the Don and Lana Show, and archives will show up in case you can't get enough of us. But it also has recipes. And, it's not like we are always remembering to put things up.
Right. We're not making a cookbook here, but these are recipes that over the years we have mentioned on air that we thought maybe needed specific ingredients, and quantities that you might want to refer to.
Right, so there's some handy stuff there for your holiday dinners and
I think my pumpkin cobbler is on there, right?
I believe it is. That's another good thing that is
right. Donna does not make pies the way Lana does, right? So right. I have this pumpkin cobbler recipe for which I use buttercup or kabocha squash, right? And I roast the squash or steam it or whatever, so you end up with it. You know, the mashed pumpkin-y sort of thing. But this cobbler is, there's two liquids. There's the pumpkin-flavored liquid, liquid-ish. And then you make a batter. And you melt the butter in the pan, in the oven. And then you pour in, let's see, is it the pumpkin or the batter? I can't remember because I haven't done it for a year. But anyway, you end up with a pumpkin cobbler, which I love. And that recipe is on there. I will be making it this year, as I have made every year for the past 20 years.
See, tradition. Yes, it is. Good. And we're looking forward to our traditional Thanksgiving gatherings. And they don't have to be big and involved. Mainly what makes a good Thanksgiving gathering is all those smiling faces around your table.
Yes, all these thankful people, right?
I'll invite those people in. It's good. I have a tick-a-dick-tick-a-dick. There's a news item I wish to spring on you folks.
Okay.
And you've probably read this, but it's a food-related item, so I thought maybe we should talk about it here on the Don and Lana Kitchen. Tick-a-dick-tick-a-dick. That's our ticker tape there. There is a advertising aid, a push for getting people to eat more pork. And
this is Iowa news.
The Iowa Pork Producers Association, okay, where else would it be? The Iowa Pork Producers Association contacted the Iowa State University football department, and they've been doing a bunch of eat more pork things, and so they were kind of making this push as part of football and homecoming.
Okay,
and,
so football players eat pork.
Right.
So that's how they get so big and strong, right?
That's how they
do. Oh boy.
But would you believe it? Now, I'm taking them at their word that these really are the names of the football players, because, as you know, football players have on their jerseys their name on the back. So here they stand. And they found people on the Iowa State football team that, believe it or not, were actually named Cook, Hammond, Bacon. They also found more Hammond Bacon, and they found Purchase Hammond Bacon, and there's a guy also named Lovett. So they've been putting them together in different photo op opportunities, and there you have. Now, what is the possible chance that there'd be all those names on the football team?
Yeah, well, I would say it's certainly a dual marketing opportunity for ISU and the Pork Producers Association. I mean, oh my.
So there you go. And actually, this was for last month.
The names are Cook, Hammond, H-A-M-A-N. H-A-M-A-N, Bacon. Can you imagine being in Iowa and your last name is Bacon? Oh, my goodness. More, that's a little more common. And Cook is fairly common. And Lovett is a little bit common. But
and Purchase is the guy named Purchase. So it's kind of like Scrabble. You know,
Sounds like an inevitability. You know, you got that line up and there you go.
Well, good for them. Anyway, the Iowa pork producers, I guess these football players get a bit of remuneration for their advertising work. And they also are giving pork products to food banks and stuff too. So in the spirit of the season, so that's a little bit of
that's a very Iowa story. There
it's
we
a very
go.
Iowa oh boy, story, oh boy. And we always like to keep up things and keep up on the news here at the Donna Lana Kitchen. Yes, we do. So you are listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. As we have mentioned before, to support this fine radio station, go to khoifm.org/membership. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Well, for a minute here, let's consider quantity. I mean, that recipes need quantity, and we deal with quantity and numbers all the time. We count
bank
things.
Balances. Yeah.
How much? How many grains of salt in a tablespoon? Huh? How many stars in the sky? How big exactly is the national debt? Huh? See, we hear these numbers all the time. So let's think about some big numbers. And oh, trillion this and trillion that. And it's hard to kind of get that your mind around it. I've been reading a book called, and this is an old book, it's been around for a while, it's called I'm a Stranger Here Myself, Notes on Returning to America After 20 Years Away by Bill Bryson. Bill Bryson.
A fine Iowa fellow.
A nice curmudgeon. He grew up in Des Moines and went off and did a lot of things. He wrote the book A Walk in the Woods, which was turned into a movie. But this is a little collection of his curmudgeonly look at things. And he was looking at the national debt, and this was written quite a while ago, so his trillion is not as big as trillions now, but he said, how do you get your mind around this, okay?
You don't.
But here, he gives us in two little paragraphs here, gives us some advice. Well, this is what Bill Bryson says. Let's just try to grasp the concept of 1 trillion. Imagine that you're in a vault filled with dollar bills and that you were told you could keep each one you initialed. Say, too, for the sake of argument, that you could initial $1 bill per second and that you worked straight through without ever stopping. How long do you think it would take to count a trillion? Go on. Humor me. Take a guess. 12 weeks? 2 years? 5? If you initialed $1 per second, you would make $1,000 every 17 minutes. After 12 days of nonstop effort, you would acquire your first $1 million. Thus, it would take you 120 days to accumulate 10 million and 1,200 days, something over 3 years, to reach 100 million. And after 31.7 years, you would become a billionaire. Billionaire.
And this is nonstop, right?
Nonstop.
No bathroom breaks.
And after almost 1,000 years, you'd be maybe as wealthy as Bill Gates. But not until after 31,709.8 years would you count your 1 trillionth dollar.
Oh, and gazillions of trillions. Yeah, oh, yeah, my, my.
And that's just kind of a little bite of our current debt. Anyway, just to kind of give you something to keep you up at night there, that's what 1 trillion is.
Oh, yeah. Our mere mortal minds. I guess when they throw those figures around, it's, you know, it's obviously incomprehensible, really.
It is.
Leave it to the computers, right?
Well, and the thing is, we seem to be going on. Okay, remember that money is a mind construct. It's not a real thing. It's what we agree money is. So
right. We don't even probably have a place to stack up that many $1 bills.
I don't think so either.
That would take a lot of space.
Anyway, so a little mind game there, a bit of advice from Bill Bryson and from his book, I'm a Stranger Here Myself. There he is. Well, we don't need trillions of dollars here at the community radio station, KHOI. Would appreciate your support. Yes, it would. Yeah, a little bit will do it. So, although you don't have to think about trillions of dollars, maybe you've got your checkbook out or something that you can poke around online, think of sending us some quantity of money with some zeros after it.
Mike, are people supposed to renew their memberships, too? What are the options?
That's right. You can go to khoifm.org/membership, and you can renew all right there.
Good. Yeah, and we're all better for it, yes. Well, Donna, do you have anything else to say about recipes go along with the turkey?
The stuffing is the one we have not mentioned. I'm going to forego green beans. I'm not a green bean fan at Thanksgiving anyway. I'll go for Brussels sprouts or kale or something like that. But stuffing, oh boy, do you want cornbread stuffing? Do you want bread stuffing? Do you want rice, wild rice stuffing with chestnuts in it? You know, some people put sausage in their stuffing. Some people put apples in. And I think every family has a tradition. And there's so many, many good things. You know, you put some in the bird, but you make enough to left over to have a Pyrex of it sitting on the side. You know, every year, for me, it's a quandary. What do I want to make for the stuffing this year? Because it's fun.
Yes.
Lots of herbaceous seasoning. There's a good place for brown butter sage. I use a lot of, actually I've been using, I have two things going. I use a lot of bay leaves, like especially in stocks and soups and stuff like that. But lately from Burlap and Barrel, you can grind your own bay leaves, but I've been buying there. They have two kinds of bay leaves, the Caribbean bay, which is a little milder, and then the traditional bay leaf that everybody thinks of as bay leaf, laurel bay leaf, and they sell them both ground. Huh. Now, so if you're making stuffing, that's a lovely way to, and if you don't have time to order any from Burlap and Barrel, just put some bay leaves into your spice grinder, coffee mill, /whatever, and powder them yourselves.
Good idea, because bay leaves are these hard, awful things you don't like to bite into.
No, when you're cooking with them, in some things you just fish them out. But for stuffing, it's really nice to have it all ground in there.
Oh, good, good. Oh, and a hint, do not throw away that little pack of stuff that comes inside.
Oh, the giblets, yes.
The giblets, there's all the icky bits, but they are not icky bits. They are stuff to at least put in water, cook them a while, and you get some really nice stock. And
yeah, yes. Say, even if you stick them back in the freezer. And now, save the carcass from the turkey, right? Okay. And all of the drippings in the bottom of the pan, and you will have the best stock ever. Do not waste your annual opportunity to have a really good turkey stock.
Right, right. So stuffing. Oh, it's so good. It's so. Oh, I want to mention that there's a really good, if you're at a loss for cornbread, the Donalena Kitchen recipe page has the recipe for Paul Nelson's really good cornbread. And that's a good start.
That makes a nice stuffing too. Now, if you're going to make your own cornbread, you need to start it early enough so that you can let it dry out.
Yes.
Because just like your breadcrumbs, I mean your bread cube. I don't buy the stuffing mixes. Yeah. I usually start from scratch. And, you know, toast the breadcrumbs in the oven, bread cubes, sorry. And the same thing with the cornbread. You want it to either sit out on the shelf and dry out a little bit, because otherwise you'll end up with
soup.
Mush in the middle of the bread. Although, one time, this is a starlet thing, Taya Leone mentioned for her Thanksgiving, she stuffs her turkeys with tamales.
What?
Well, obviously you take the corn wrappers off, but that ends up being masa and, you know, Mexican flavored meats and things. And that sounds really good to me also. Another option.
Who would have thought? Well, goodness. I suppose you could stuff. Well, actually, and
that's a Southern California trick where you can get tamales really easily. Yeah.
Right. Especially the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, also, I mean, I don't know who wouldn't want stuffing, but some people just put some apples and oranges inside of the bird and cook it that way, which helps it stay moist and all that sort of thing. But do go for the stuffing. I would say that's the best part.
Yeah, but you need this starch heavy sweet potatoes, stuffing, you know. That's part of the thing.
And then
be
prepared for an afternoon nap. Yes, yeah. We do. Good, good. Oh, also I want to remind you that next week we will continue our discussion of fun things to make for the holidays, for the Thanksgiving table, for other things too. And so we will talk more about this book, Company, The Radical Casual Art of Cooking for Others by Amy Phelan. It's a nice book. And she also wrote books called The New Midwestern Table. That's lovely. And a book called Give a Girl a Knife. So we'll have more of that next week. And I want to mention here there's an upcoming thing here coming this weekend, November 18th, for those of you in the Ames area, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market will be having the first of two holiday farmers markets. There will be another one in December. They will be on Main Street, but don't worry, not outside on Main Street. There will be two locations where vendors can sell you all kinds of stuff. And one of those...
Local stuff?
Yeah, local stuff and stuff for the holidays, too. One is at Sweet Caroline's Kitchen and Cocktails on Main Street. And the another is in the American Legion Post 37 on Main Street, because there's just too much there for one place. So there are two events. Ames Main Street Farmers Market from 10 to 2 this coming Saturday at Sweet Caroline's and the American Legion Post. Oh, I bet you could find something there for your holiday table.
Maybe you could get your squashes to make your pies there.
I bet you could. You never know. You've been listening to the Donalena Kitchen. We come to you on this fine radio station every Tuesday at noon, repeated at 7 p.m. Or you can find us at our podcast.
Yes, wherever you listen to podcasts, just type in Donalena, that's one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, second word, kitchen, and we will just pop right up with our podcast.
Lovely. We have music today by the Barnall Band. We'll go out with a piece called The Peacock Rag. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.